above the polls. Are you registered? Because you should be. Fill that ballot out, it's a voting spree. Put that mask on, don't touch me. Ain't gonna let voting line shush me. We decide who's in the house on the hill. House on the hill, putting stamps on the bill. Unite to the fight to make America gay. So the American slave, the American way. You better vote, you better vote, you better vote. Now you better vote. Hello, everyone. It is Britta, and welcome to my new podcast, You Britta Votes. On this podcast, I kiki with activists, organizers, and elected officials about all things politics, from voting to climate change to LGBTQIA+ equality. My guests and I will spill the tea on what's happening in the current political landscape and how you can make your voices heard on the issues. Just as a little side note, Drag Out the Vote, for which I am the national co-chair of, is a nonpartisan nonprofit. So my work there is strictly nonpartisan, but on this podcast, mother, I am speaking from my own personal opinion. So get ready for this unfiltered tea, honey. Now, listen, let's get into it. Today, I am super excited. We have a very special guest. It is Jamie Margolin. Jamie, I'm so excited that you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here.
Yes, yes. Now, for those of you that are listening, here's a little bit about Jamie. Her writing about climate change has appeared in many publications, including HuffPost, Teen Inc., and CNN. She was part of Teen Vogue's 21 Under 21 class of 2018. In 2018, she was also named as one of People's Magazine's 25 Women Changing the World. And they are also a climate justice activist and co-founder of Zero Hour. Honey, you're not even 21 yet, and you are doing the damn thing. And I just have to say, as an activist, as a climate activist myself, incredible work. You're doing such incredible work at such a young age, and it's so beautiful to see. And a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are definitely young people as well. I mean, young people love RuPaul's Drag Race.
Really, one of my friends back home in Seattle is always talking about RuPaul's Drag Race consistently, and is always just like telling me just random facts and information about RuPaul's Drag Race that like I don't know, because I am sorry to say I have not. I've seen clips that my friend has sat me down to watch, but I haven't properly appreciated the show, and so.
Totally. I totally get it. Now there are so many different franchises of RuPaul's Drag Race. There's one in Italy. There's one in España. There's so many different ones that even I can't keep up. But I have definitely seen the clips of them all. Now listen, I want to know, and for our listeners out there, not viewers, but listeners, how did you get involved in climate justice?
Well, I got involved in climate justice when I was, when I was 15 years old, but activism in general when I was 14 years old. So when I was 14 is when the 2016 election was happening. I was a freshman in high school, and I was really not happy with what I was seeing regarding Trump rising to power. And so I thought that if I could keep politicians who were active climate deniers out of office, then I could make an impact on the climate and the environment and the lives of those around me. And so I became an intern at my local Democratic campaign headquarters and did a bunch of organizing and mobilizing around my community in Seattle. I trained volunteers. I translated Spanish for Spanish speakers who didn't speak English. So I'm half Colombian. My mom is from Colombia, South America. And so I speak fluent Spanish. And so I would like be also a translator there for people who didn't speak English. I did so much at the office. I was like an intern at the Democratic campaign headquarters. And then spoiler alert, we all know how that election turned out. And that really crushed me for a long time. And then I decided to pivot to more issue-based work. And so when I was in December, around that time, I turned 15 in December. And then I also kind of got myself up from crying constantly all the time about the election and being scared of what it would hold. The election had already happened. More about the scary anticipation of the Trump administration. And I was like, okay, I've shed enough tears. I'm going to do something now. And I decided to fight for climate justice through an issue-based lens. And I found a local organization called Plant for the Planet. It was a bunch of young people who were taking climate action. I got involved. I helped them go to the Washington State Capitol of Olympia and try to get bills passed. I would testify at different bill hearings. I would skip days off of, this was still my freshman year. Freshman. I would skip days from school to go to Olympia and testify in front of different elected officials and things for different local bills happening in the state. And after a year of just tireless work, nothing was happening. And people often are under this assumption that, oh, Washington State, Seattle, like you're all green hippie liberals, so they must all want climate action. But that's not how it works. And even in Seattle, even in a Washington State, it is very hard to get climate legislation passed. And so I was very... The summer of 2017 came along and it was climate disaster after climate disaster after climate disaster. There was Hurricane Maria, Hurricane Harvey. My city of Seattle was coated in a very thick layer of smog due to wildfires. Now, I've lived in Seattle from when I was 2 years old to when I was 18 years old. I think one would remember in that time of having lived somewhere your whole life, if there had been smog like that before. There hadn't. That was the first summer where we had like the city, like all the way in the city, we were getting like the wildfire smoke because that's how intense it had gotten. And it made me sick. It gave me headaches. It was horrible. And different people with asthma and respiratory illnesses went to the ER. It was awful. So then I decided that I wanted to take my action to the next level. So I posted online that I was going to start a youth climate march. I asked who's with me. And a girl named Nadia Nazar from Baltimore reached out to me and said that she was interested in making a youth climate march happen. She was also concerned about the climate crisis. And then I brought in two other young people from the summer program I was at Princeton at the time. For political communications. And I brought in two young people from there and then kept bringing in more and more. And over the summer of 2017 to 2018, we built the organization that is Zero Hour because we have 0 hours left to act on climate. And so we organized youth climate marches in Washington, D.C. and in 25 cities around the world in July of 2018. That's when they happened. We also had a massive lobby day where we met with politicians like Bernie Sanders and other senators. To deliver no fossil fuel money pledges to try to get the government to divest from fossil fuels and politicians to divest from fossil fuels. And those marches sparked a lot of actions after them and helped lay the groundwork for the school strike for climate movement. And then a couple weeks after the youth climate marches that we organized, Greta Thunberg started her school strike and then the school strikes took off. And then we in Zero Hour organized a youth climate summit in Miami to train young people and then organized. And because that's also a frontline place where people are really feeling the impacts. And then there was event after protest after strike. I published a book called Youth to Power, Your Voice and How to Use It, which is a guide to being a young activist for any cause. Because at that point, I had started doing a lot of speaking events and rallies and conferences and marches. And I was meeting people and they asked me, like, how can I take action? I'm really terrified about the climate crisis too. Or I really want to take action on women's rights or LGBT rights, like other issues too, but I don't know how. And I kept getting these same questions. And I was like, okay, there is clearly a need for this information to be consolidated in an accessible, easy to read manner for any cause. And so I wrote and published that book and it came out in June of 2020. And now it's out all over the world. And yeah, that's a little bit about how I got started in activism. Oh yeah. One more thing. Another aspect is that I got involved legally in a legal battle against the state of Washington, for continually denying my generation's rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness by actively making the climate crisis worse. So Our Children's Trust is an organization that helps young people sue governments for climate recovery plans to be court mandated, implemented, by using the argument that they are denying an entire generation rights to life, liberty, and happiness, supposedly inalienable rights, but you can't have those rights without clean air, clean water, and a livable future. Yeah. So that's still going on.
Oh my God, Jamie, you are incredible. I've read about you, but to listen to you talk about all of this, and before you're even able to vote, you were at the forefront of all of this. I mean, that's why I started this podcast, and I'm such a huge fan of yours, because what you're doing is what I'm doing now later on in life, and you truly are the inspiration for so many young people to make change. You know, I think I've had conversations with young people before, and they're like, well, I'm so young, like, I don't know, nobody's going to listen to me. But you are living proof that, like, if you want something to happen, y'all better follow Jamie, because Jamie knows what she's doing up in this gig. So I thank you for everything that you do. It's so amazing to hear all the incredible work that you've done, and with Zero Hour, that is absolutely incredible, for which you're the co-founder for. Now, I want to dive into something else. In 2018, you were named Teen Vogue's 21 Under 21 class, which spotlighted extraordinary young women, girls, and femmes making waves in industries or passions of choice. And we have Emma Gonzalez, who's the activist for gun control from Parkland, for those of you listening that don't know. And of course, Greta Thunberg, and the young climate activist from Sweden, and yourself, all girls under 21. I mean, it's really beautiful to see these teen girls, these young women, are really doing the dang thing when it comes to activism. Why do you think this is happening? Why, you know, I'm seeing more and more young people coming to the forefront. I mean, usually the answer for me would be, well, y'all are gonna live on this planet after us old folks go away. Is that the reason why?
Okay, you say us old folks as if you're just like so old and decaying. You are not old. Okay, yes, like it was your birthday, but like it wasn't your 80th birthday. It wasn't your 95th birthday. So you're here, and there are people who are like 101 and still chilling. So
true that. You know, I told everyone that I was turning 75 yesterday so that they could all tell me that I was looking good. That's how you get away with it.
Happy 75.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you're right. I ain't that old. But yeah, why?
You say you're in this, we're in this together. You're essentially like a young millennial, and I'm like Gen Z. Like, it's not that far.
You're right.
Generation wise. Right. We're in this together.
Absolutely. But yeah, why do you think so many young women specifically are getting involved in climate change?
Well, I think that there's many reasons for it. First of all, I think that our culture has a way of just absolute hatred and disdain for teenage girls. If something is liked widespread by teenage girls, it's automatically considered bad, tasteless. Like, think of, like, you know, things that older men like are considered like, oh, cinema or like great art. But things that teenage girls like, oh, that's something that a teenage girl, like, it's automatically shameful to even be associated with teenage girlhood, I think, in our culture. Like, it's just adolescence for girls is just something that is so rough, especially if you are a queer young person too. And so I think that, I mean, one could argue, and it has been argued, and it is very true, that the climate crisis is a feminist issue, because 80% of the people displaced by the climate crisis, according to the United Nations, are women. So when you are of a gender that is oppressed, marginalized, has wage gap, all of this different obstacles that are stacked against women, especially around the world, here in the United States too, but also all around the world, then it makes it a lot harder for a woman to be able to flee safely from climate disaster and have enough money to start over. And also, there's a lot of physical violence that women have to fear, that could make it unsafe for a woman traveling or trying to survive, as opposed to a man, where you don't feel like you have, I don't know, I've never experienced male privilege, but I assume for some, I don't know, I've always walked down the street scared, clutching my pepper spray. Like, that's never not been my reality, I guess. So I don't know what it's like, I guess, for some of the men out there who are safe and chilling walking down the street. But the point is that I think the climate crisis is an intersectional issue, and it is a feminist issue, and women are impacted more. And I think that, I mean, there's this great, I love, one of my favorite artists is Princess Nokia, and she has this song where she sings, it's called Young Girls, where she talks about young girls, protectors of the earth. And I just kind of felt that. And I remember loving that song when I was really young too. And I just, I feel that. That doesn't mean, like, there are a lot of great young boys, young non-binary people, young people of all genders are doing great work for the climate. But I think if we're asking about from the lens of, like, women, I think there is something, like that Princess Nokia song, something about, like, young women and protecting the earth that, I don't know. It seems intrinsic.
Yeah. I really hit home with you. Now, you live in NYC as I do. And, you know,
we need to meet up.
We do need to meet up. You go to NYU, and listen, I got my shows up in the West Village. I'm a hop, skip, and a.
Oh my God. I really want to see a show.
Honey, I got a show at Pieces every Friday. I have one tonight. You can come to brunch, or, you know, I'll just put you in drag. Nobody will know, Jamie.
Nobody will know.
You'll be one of us, honey.
I will. That sounds amazing. Right?
Well, you know,
it could be like in a lady. I could be like Lady Gaga in A Star Is Born. You know, when she's like at the drag thing, and
yes. I am the Shangela to your Lady Gaga.
I'm really gay, so if Bradley Cooper walked in there, I'd probably just be like, "Hey, man, nice to meet you." And that would be the end of the movie. I'd be like, neat, you seem cool. Let's be friends. And that'd be it.
That's hilarious. Now, you know, we got pummeled with the remnants of Hurricane Ida in September, and more than 3 inches of rainfall in a single hour in Central Park that night, it shattering a record that had been set just days before by tropical storm Henri.
It was like pretentious. It was like French.
Come on, pretentious.
They're like, the storm is French.
Now, you know, the scary thing is that our subway system was crippled, and 50 people even died in New York State from the remnants of Ida. It was really scary. How do you feel about the state of the climate crisis today? I feel like it's just literally getting worse every single day.
It is literally getting worse every single day. And the state of the climate crisis is that no place is safe. There's no place where you can think we're immune to it. And I think when people look at New York City, because it's a concrete jungle and it's so, like, man-made, one would assume that we have full control over it. But I remember that night, that night when the remnants of Ida hit, I was out. And so I saw everything, and I was like I got absolutely soaked to the bone multiple times because I had to, like, get from point A to point B. And I remember, like, eventually having to take an Uber, and the rain was, like, falling harder than I've ever seen rain fall in my entire life before. And I'm from Seattle. So, like, but Seattle, it just drizzles. It's not like this. Seattle, it will just, like, oh, pitter patter, whatever. You can go out and have, you know, it's not like this. This was scary. Usually rain is, like, friendly and playful, I feel like, the vibes of rain. But this felt violent. Like, it felt like buckets of just, like, a fire hose. Like the water hurt. Like, I was like, this is hazardous. And I managed to make it home safe, thank God, but a lot of people didn't. And not just in New York, but I just mean everywhere that's being hit by climate disasters. A lot of people don't make home safe, or their homes are not safe because they're in the line of danger. And it was really weird to get a notification from NYU that's like, stay away from your windows, tornado warning in Manhattan. And I was like, what? Are you insane? A tornado warning in Manhattan? Is this is the bad place? Like, this is, you know, I just kind of had that realization. And I have that realization every summer / September of, like, fire season and, like, but now it's not even seasonal anymore, because with the polar vortexes and everything that happened with Texas, I feel like the news cycles move on so quickly that we don't take it seriously enough. Did you know that Jeff Bezos riding into space on a very phallic-shaped object received more press attention than all of the climate coverage this year combined? Him riding a metal cylinder to space for 2 minutes and coming down in a cowboy hat saying that we should have space pollution now got more media attention than this crisis that is killing millions got in an entire year.
That's so fucked up. And you know, it brings me to what do you think needs to happen for us to solve this crisis? You know, in terms of like political will and corporate changes, what do you think needs to happen?
Well, first things first, there needs to be divestment at all levels. So what is divestment? Basically, the fossil fuel industry has a monetary grip on all aspects of life, on universities. Harvard just made history by divesting from the fossil fuel industry. But that was after students have pushed for a decade for that to happen. And after a decade of student activism, and I remember speaking and helping out with one of those protests and now seeing that like that student work over years and years and years and persistence actually came to fruition. But for example, NYU is still not divested, and there are a lot of other universities that are still not divested from the fossil fuel industry. Our government has these things called fossil fuel subsidies, which is essentially the government paying the fossil fuel industry to continue destruction and giving them support monetarily and being, it's a financial intertwinement between our government and the fossil fuel industry. I encourage everyone to research fossil fuel subsidies. So we have our government controlled by the industry. Then we also have, and that's not just fossil fuels, because animal agriculture industries, chemical industries, they're also causing the climate crisis. So they also have, you know, their hand in everything. And then a lot of politicians, like the whole reason the Republican Party's stance is like climate change is not a thing, is not because everyone just got together and agreed. It's because of the fossil fuel industry's grip on those politicians and on some Democrat and on many Democratic politicians too. Not immune. Don't think just because someone's a Democrat doesn't mean that they haven't, you know, you have to make sure that they don't have a fossil fuel past, like there's or fossil fuel corporations funding their campaigns. So corporations also pick candidates and fund their campaigns so that the candidate can then do their bidding in the government, which subsidizes the fossil fuel industry. So you see, and universities, endowments are in, so it's just, it's so much, our whole financial system is like intertwined with what's causing us death. So we're essentially investing in the destruction of our future and our children's futures and our planets. And so the first step to getting out of a hole is to stop digging. And, you know, everyone always says, follow the money, and whatever you're investing in and whatever you're making happen and paying for is what's going to happen. And so right now we're paying for our own destruction. So we have to get all of that fossil fuel money and all of those special interests out of politics, out of universities, out of our society, so that we can then build the clean energy future that we need to save ourselves.
Totally. I mean, it sounds so much easier than done, especially with all these companies and all this political will and people having a hold on them on what they do and what they say. Now, what do you think that everyday people can do to contribute to solving the crisis? You know, I watched a documentary and I read a book a few years ago. I didn't realize how much like eating meat products definitely.
Oh, Cowspiracy.
Yeah. I had no idea. I had no idea that me eating meat was truly driving up global warming, climate crisis, all of it. I had no idea. So I became a vegan because of it. And then I convinced everyone in my apartment to become a vegan. I mean, that's just a small thing I think that I was able to do. But I'm interested to know from you, what else can everyday people do to stop the shit?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that everyday people can do, whether it be within their own lives, but also I think everyday people need to have a part of systemic change. I think the best thing that an individual can do is join a collective. What that means is this is not an issue of a kid used a plastic straw once, that's why there's plastic in the oceans. Yes, it's like cut back on your individual, you know, impact on the earth. But you know the term carbon footprint? Yeah. That was actually invented by the fossil fuel industry. The term carbon footprint was invented by BP Oil.
Wow.
The fossil fuel industry wants us to be super focused on our own impact and our own thing, and just to the point that we don't even look at them, that we're just like, I'm the problem. It's a form of like mass victim blaming, essentially, yeah. Where it's like, I'm the problem. And like, you're like, and like it, to point fingers at each other and, you know, oh, did you recycle? And like, did you, one of my friends / mentors in the movement, Mary Hagler, wrote a great piece that I encourage everyone to look up called I'm an Environmentalist and I Don't Care If You Recycle. And it's essentially, and I don't know if that's the exact title, but it'll come up. I forget. It's been a while since she published it, but essentially Shell Oil tweets things like, what are you doing for the earth today? Happy Earth Day. Like, they are now greenwashing and passing, you know, encouraging people to recycle and like take care of the earth, everyone, while they are responsible for the vast majority of emissions. 100 corporations are responsible for 70% of all global emissions. The fishing industry and the general industries are responsible for the vast majority of plastic pollution. Yes, plastic straws are bad, but they do not account for most of it. Yes, continue your own eco-friendly habits, because that does make a difference and you should live out the change you want to see. But the fossil fuel industry wants us to just think that we're the problem, correct our own little thing and go about our day feeling good. Like, oh, I recycled, I did my part, I'm good, you know, and think that it's our fault. And that if we didn't, oh, the planet's heating up because I didn't turn off my lights, when they are the ones actively creating the society that is essentially holding us hostage, where we have no choice but to rely on these fossil fuel products. And they point their fingers back at us and be like, and they prevent renewable energy and progress and things, and then point their fingers back at us and see like, you didn't recycle. So it's a really messed up system that we're in. So the best thing that an individual can do, I think, is get involved with an organization, or if you have a little bit of money, every month, if you can, like, sign up to donate a little bit. Like, a lot of organizations have like $5 a month or $10 a month, like very affordable donations that help keep them afloat. I would encourage looking up frontline organizations. You know, a lot of the big greens, the Sierra Club, NRDC, 350, these are like organizations that do good work and have like, you definitely need fundraising also, but get a lot of it in general because of their big name status and being big greens. So the best place that we as individuals can put our money to make the most impacts is funding the front lines, funding indigenous organizations, donating to, I would do some research on the Line 3, the fight to stop the Line 3 fossil fuel infrastructure that indigenous people right now are on the front lines here in the United States, again, fighting another piece of fossil fuel infrastructure built on their land against their consent that is going to harm the earth. And so the donating to activists' bail funds who are fighting Line 3, or donating to indigenous organizations like the International Indigenous Youth Council or Amazon Watch, or Amazon Watch helps Amazon protectors in the Amazon rainforest, not Jeff Bezos, the rainforest. So there's, but the main point is, it can get really lonely. And so if you are a part of a community or an organization, and this doesn't mean you have to be an organizer who puts your entire life on hold to become a full-time activist, just like a little bit of money and a little bit of time and a little bit of attention every so often to a larger collective fighting for systemic change. If everyone does a little bit, everyone got involved a little bit, signed up for these organizations, donated a bit, that's going to turn into a lot of systemic change. That's going to overthrow, you know, this whole way that we're existing in the sense of like relying on fossil fuels.
Well, you definitely convinced me. I'm going to look up a way to give money and give monthly to organizations to create systemic change, because it is so important. I'm so grateful that you were able to take some time out of your busy schedule to come talk to us about this. You know, and I want people to support your work that you're doing, because you're doing incredible things. What can people do to support you, and how can people find your book? I want to get your book, honey. I'm gonna read it. I'm going.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. Absolutely.
Where can people find all about you, and how can they support you?
Absolutely. So my name is Jamie Margolin. Again, you can find me on all social media platforms. I'm at Jamie_S_Margolin on Instagram, or you can just type in Jamie Margolin on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook. I'm on there. And if you're a nerd, I'm also on LinkedIn. So you can type in Jamie Margolin and I don't know, we can nerd about career things there. I don't know how people like connect on LinkedIn, but I have it. And then for my book, you can go to, it's called Youth to Power. So, and it's everywhere books are sold. So you can go to www.youthtopowerbook.com to order the book, or you can go to your local bookstore and request to see if they have Youth to Power. There is also a French language edition, an Italian language edition, Korean edition. So there's a lot of different language editions too, if English is not your first language. So again, that's www.youthtopowerbook.com. I'm also a filmmaker and
you're studying film at NYU right
now. If you wanna, right? I'm studying film at NYU right now. Yeah. So if you want to support the work that I do regarding film and also LGBT activism that I also do, follow at Lavender U Pod, which is my podcast that is talking about I talk about representation in media and the importance of representation, especially for queer women and femmes. And we have different artists and singers and showrunners and writers. Like we had Tegan and Sarah on, and the creators of the Harley Quinn animated series. And we're having and actors from She-Ra and other like iconic queer shows to come on and talk about representation. So if you're interested in some more queer listening, then go to lavenderupod.com or just follow at Lavender U Pod on all social media accounts or on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. And yeah, that's where you can find me and some of the things that I'm working
amazing.
On.
That's amazing. Truly, you are so incredible. I am in awe and shock of you are only 19 years old. You have done so much, not only for youth out there, but for our entire country. And so you're truly a light and you're someone to look out for, and you're going to do even bigger and better things. And I can't wait to follow you, and I can't wait to truly just join you, honey. Listen, if you have a march or a protest, baby, I will get up in the gig.
Yes, actually, yes, there is one on September 24th. There is a climate strike happening. So you can come.
September 24th, I'm actually out of town during that time, but
okay, that's okay. But that's a global climate strike. So there, wherever you might be, just look up. There might be one near you. But anyway, other than that, absolutely. Like, I will let you know. And we should also just hang out around the city. I've only seen a couple of drag shows in my day, in my existence, but I've seen like, I think four. They were all from like the same venue. It was all like the same. There was a period of time where I just went like every other week, and I absolutely love them. And I need to properly watch RuPaul's Drag Race. I feel like I'm not a real gay person if I haven't.
Listen, just watch season 12. Season 12 is the best season.
I'll watch season 12.
Best season ever.
I wonder why. And why is that?
Well, you know, episodes 1-6 are really good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know, because
I'll just check those out.
The pure angel herself, Britta Filters, on those.
Okay, I'll check that one out. Britta, vote. Now vote. Vote.
Now pose. Now serve it at the polls. Yeah, well, I thank you. Thank you so much. A huge thank you to Jamie Margolin, the World of Wonder and Drag Out the Vote. I end this episode to let everyone know that we need to look out for each other. It is so important. If you see something unjust happening, step in. And just a nice little reminder that Black Lives Matter, Black Trans Lives Matter, Stop Asian Hate. Lastly, make sure you make your voice heard because it matters. And remember, I'm a vote, so you Britta vote, okay? Britta vote. Now vote. Vote. Now pose. Now serve it at the polls. Work.
Serve. Come vote at the polls. Girl, you finished with your ballot?
Come on, sis. Let's turn these in.
Wait, where's my sticker?
I got a free pin, though.
You Britta vote.